If our society ever opted for Orwell's Big Brother approach, the instrument of choice for oppression would have to be the credit wake. In a totally non-cash economy, with only a vestigial barter black market, a person's activities could be tracked in real time by monitoring the credit wake of his or her universal card. There were strict laws protecting card privacy, but laws had a bad habit of being ignored or abrogated when societal push came to totalitarian shove. Johnny's credit wake for the 5-day period leading to his murder showed a man of regular habits and modest expenses. Before following up the leads on the credit flimsy, I'd spent a dull 2 days following Johnny himself. Data. He lived alone in East Berkson Hive. A routine check showed that he'd lived there about 7 local months, less than 5 standard. In the morning, he had breakfast at a local cafe and then farcast to Renaissance Vector, where he worked for about 5 hours, evidently gathering research of some sort in the print archives, followed by a light lunch at a courtyard vendor stand, another hour or two in the library, and then cast home to Lussis or to some favorite eating spot on another world. In his cubby by 2200 hours. More farcasting than the average Lussian middle-class drone, but an otherwise uninspiring schedule. The credit flimsies confirmed that he had held to the agenda on the week he was murdered, with the addition of a few extra purchases, shoes one day, groceries the next, and one stop at a bar on Renaissance V on the day of his murder. I joined him for dinner at the small restaurant on Red Dragon Street near the Tsingtao Cishuangpana portal. The food was very hot, very spicy, and very good. "How is it going?" he asked. "Great. I'm 1,000 marks richer than when we met, and I found a good Cantonese restaurant." "I'm glad my money is going toward something important." "Speaking of your money, where does it come from? Hanging out in a Renaissance Vector library can't pay much." Johnny raised an eyebrow. "I live on a small inheritance." "Not too small, I hope. I want to be paid."
"It will be adequate for our purposes, Emlamia. Have you discovered anything of interest?"
I shrugged. "Tell me what you do in that library."
"Can it possibly be germane?"
"Yeah, could be."
He looked at me strangely. Something about his eyes made me go weak at the knees.
"You remind me of someone," he said softly.
"Oh?"
From anyone else, that line would have been cause for an exit.
"Who?"
I asked.
"A woman I once knew, long ago."
He brushed fingers across his brow as if he were suddenly tired or dizzy.
"What was her name?"
"Fanny."
The word was almost whispered. I knew who he was talking about. John Keats had a fiancée named Fanny. Their love affair had been a series of romantic frustrations which almost drove the poet mad. When he died in Italy, alone except for one fellow traveler, feeling abandoned by friends and his lover, Keats had asked that unopened letters from Fanny and a lock of her hair be buried with him. I'd never heard of John Keats before this week. I'd accessed all this shit with my comm log. I said, "So, what do you do at the library?"
The cybrid cleared his throat.
"I'm researching a poem, searching for fragments of the original."
"Something by Keats?"
"Yes."
"Wouldn't it be easier to access it?"
"Of course, but it is important for me to see the original, to touch it."
I thought about that.
"What's the poem about?"
He smiled, or at least his lips did. The hazel eyes still seemed troubled.
"It's called Hyperion." It's difficult to describe what it's about. Autistic failure, I suppose. Keats never finished it. I pushed aside my plate and sipped warm tea. You say Keats never finished it. Don't you mean you never finished it? His look of shock had to be genuine, unless AIs were consummate actors. For all I knew, they could be. Good God, he said. I'm not John Keats. Having a persona based upon a retrieval template no more makes me Keats than having the name Lamia makes you a monster. There have been a million influences that have separated me from that poor, sad genius. You said I reminded you of Fanny. An echo of a dream. Less. You've taken RNA learning medication, yes? Yes. It's like that. Memories which feel hollow. A human waiter brought fortune cookies. Do you have any interest in visiting the real Hyperion? I asked. What's that? The outback world. Somewhere beyond Parvati, I think. Johnny looked puzzled. He had broken open the cookie, but had not yet read the fortune. It used to be called Poet's World, I think, I said. It even has a city named after you, after Keats. The young man shook his head. I'm sorry, I haven't heard of the place. How can that be? Don't AIs know everything? His laugh was short and sharp. This one knows very little. He read his fortune. Be wary of sudden impulses. I crossed my arms. You know, except for that parlor trick with the bank manager Hollow, I have no proof that you are what you say you are. Give me your hand.
My hand?
Yes, either one. Thank you. Johnny held my right hand in both of his. His fingers were longer than mine. Mine were stronger. Close your eyes, he said. I did. There was no transition. One instant I was sitting in the Blue Lotus on Red Dragon Street, and the next I was nowhere, somewhere, streaking through gray-blue datum plane, banking along chrome-yellow information highways, passing over and under and through great cities of glowing information storage, red skyscrapers sheathed in black security ice. Simple entities like personal accounts or corporate files blazing like burning refineries in the night. Above it all, just out of sight, as if poised in twisted space, hung the gigantic weights of the AIs, their simplest communications pulsing like violent heat lightning along the infinite horizons. Somewhere in the distance, all but lost in the maze of three-dimensional neon that partitioned one tiny second of arc in the incredible datasphere of one small world, I sensed rather than saw those soft hazel eyes waiting for me. Johnny released my hand. He cracked my fortune cookie open. The strip of paper read, "Invest wisely in new ventures."
Jesus,
I whispered. Bibi had taken me flying in datum plane before, but without a shunt, the experience had been a shadow of this. It was the difference between watching a black-and-white hollow of a fireworks display and being there.
How do you do that?
Will you be making any progress on the case tomorrow? He asked. I regained my composure. Tomorrow, I said, I plan to solve it.